TalkZone.com.
TalkZone presents the Geek Speak Radio Show with your hosts, Henry and Romo. Your top spot for everything entertainment and pop culture, including TV, movies, comics, casting news, and more. Now, here are your hosts, Henry and Romo.
Hello, we're here. Geek Speak Radio Show, second hour. How about some more excitement? We're all here. We're having fun. Talked to Jeff Love in the last hour. Also, Brent Anderson. Damien is here now also.
Hey,
where were you the whole last hour?
Huh?
Where were you the whole last hour?
Oh, you know, I was just busy.
He was digging up some X-Men.
You were watching the cartoons that Jeff was talking about, weren't you?
I was.
Because we were lucky enough. We did get some previews. And we got the scene before you did. That's all I got to say. And yes, they are very good. You will be very happy with what the House of Ideas is coming up with TV-wise. Now, let's talk about comics again. We just talked to Brent Anderson a few minutes ago. Let's talk to someone else who, like I told Romo before the break, is not an artist. He is an inker. You guys know what the difference is? It doesn't really matter because we can ask Al himself. Al Gordon is his name. Al, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You can ask Amy what the difference is.
Okay. What is the difference between an artist and an inker?
Well, I think, let's see, how can I explain this? I think all inkers and all pencilers are all artists. Colorists are artists. I think letterers, to a great extent, are artists. Certainly guys like John Workman and Tom Orzechowski. I mean, an artist is kind of a vague term. But in terms of illustration, I think you have to be able to draw to be a decent anchor. I can't think of one really good anchor who doesn't draw at least fairly well. But it is different. A lot of pencilers in the business, when they ink their own work, it's not terribly exciting. Sometimes it's really good. And sometimes it's not. Guys like Jim Lee, Jim's pencils look so much different than when he and Scott Williams worked together. I mean, there's an amalgam there it's not just Jim, and it's certainly not just either one of them. Does that make sense at all? A guy has to be.
Yeah, it does, I seem.
Well, somebody asked, you have to be able to finish it in ink because of the old process. But you guys are a bunch of kids, right?
Well, they are. Maybe not me.
You know, inking used to be, if you look back on like the history of what comic book art evolved from, if you look back on like Alex Raymond's Flash Gordon or Will Eisner's Spirit or, that stuff, Hal Foster's Prince Valiant and Tarzan, I guess Tarzan was before Prince Valiant, those guys, were doing, some of those guys were doing like a daily strip. I mean, literally a daily, Monday through Friday, and then a larger weekend or a larger Sunday strip. And it was a lot of work. And usually the first person they would hire as an assistant was somebody to help pencil because they were more concerned with the veneer, you know, the finish of the artwork, the rendering. And they figured that they could hire some guy to do breakdowns, have this guy tighten up the breakdowns, and then they would ink it, and it would look like them because the ink was the last step that you saw in the artwork. And so the inking was usually thought of as more important. But you know, as the whole system evolved, it became significantly different. You at Marvel, the pencilers, you know, besides when Stan was hiring these guys, besides hiring somebody that was exciting and dramatic and dynamic and could draw really well, they had to be able to tell a story. And when they weren't that dramatic or dynamic as an artist, and I won't mention any names, but they would hire a really good inker to sort of snazz it up. I mean, you had guys like Jack Kirby and John Buscema and all these, you know, guys that were my heroes when I was a little kid. These guys were great artists and amazing storytellers. Like John Buscema is a great inker, but he doesn't ink like an inker. He inks like an illustrator. It's more like it's more like Hal Foster, you know, from that school, or like turn of the century pen and ink or brush and ink artwork. I mean, that's where John seems to be coming from. But Jack was never like the greatest inker. I love his inks, but in terms of like having any panache or, you know, adding any snap to it, Jack always looked really awesome with like Joe Sinnott or Frankie Akoya or Don Heck, who is one of my favorite inkers on Jack. Does that make any sense? Or am I just babbling here?
No, it does make sense. And I was going to say, actually, somebody asked me a long time ago, I don't know why I don't work in comics or not an illustrator or inker or anything. They asked me, probably because I talk about it so much, about comics, they asked me the difference between an inker and an artist. They call them the person who draws the comic book. And I basically said, without getting too technical, the inker basically makes the artist drawing come to life, is the way I explain it. Does that pretty much cover it?
Those are all kind of nice metaphors and stuff, and it can be certainly like that. Some guy can, like, who's hired to, like Sal Buscema. I love Sal's work, John's little brother. And Sal's stuff is pretty snappy. Sal's a great inker in and of him, you know, just by himself. But Sal always looked really, really cool when, like, Joe Sinnott was on top of him. So what you just said there would apply to Sal. But Sal also inked John Buscema, his brother, on, I think, the Silver Surfer when I was a little kid. And he was one of John's best inkers. So it's not so specific. Like I said, you know, like, well, basically, how's this? I mean, in the million years that I've been doing comics, because I'm like a million and five now, you know, I've got to ink a lot of different people with a lot of different styles, and I've had pencils that were just a few steps above, like stick figures. I mean, not really, but not much complete there, you know? Sometimes the drawing was really gestural. I got to ink Kurt Swan, who was, again, one of my heroes when I was a kid. Kurt drew Spider-Man when I was a little kid. It was one of the first superhero comics I remember buying, you know, with my paper route money. I don't think there's a such thing as paper route anymore. Kurt is fantastic, but Kurt doesn't go for line drawing. If you see his pencils, they're kind of mushy. Him and Gene Colan are very similar. It's more side of the pencil, more gestural. I mean, it's beautiful work. And unless you can draw, and unless you have a lot of respect for what it looks like in the pencils, you're not going to be able to ink that stuff. And then I've inked guys like Jerry Ordway, who's really intimidating because not only is Jerry like a fantastic inker, but he's an amazing penciler. And his stuff is really tight, and when you ink him, you feel like a human Xerox machine, and you can add a little line weight, and you can try to make things, you know, more snappy, but, you know, geez, you're competing with Jerry. Jerry is one of my favorite inkers in the whole world. He's just an amazingly talented guy. So you can get stuff that's really tight and stuff that's kind of loose, and then probably everything else is kind of in the middle. I used to really dig working over Keith Giffen. That was one of the most fun periods I've ever had in comics, was working over Keith. And Keith's stuff is kind of side of the pencil, but it's pretty solid. He likes to go in with a dull pencil and kind of block in all the areas that are going to be black and that kind of stuff, and then goes in with a mechanical pencil. At least I think that's what he was using back then. Certainly a sharpened pencil, and then put in all the features and stuff like that. And you had a lot of you could mess with it quite a bit. You didn't have to stick exactly to it, because I don't think Keith expected you to it. But I liked Keith's, you know, kind of liquidy blobs that he used to draw with this with an old dull HB pencil, which is almost like working with a piece of charcoal. And I used to love that. So I used to try to bring that out in the artwork rather than kind of drawing over it.
And you kind of mentioned it, but when did you get started in comics? When did you get interested? What were your first comics that you were used to read?
I remember being a little kid. I mean, I think I was about 8 or so, and I was probably reading Dennis the Menace. And I remember I think it was a Gold Key or a Dell comic called Space Mouse, which I remember really digging as a little kid. So I'd kind of graduated from Dennis the Menace, which was really cool. And it was drawn by a guy. I remember the 25-cent annuals were always the best. And it turned out they weren't Hank Ketchum. They were drawn by a guy named Al Weissman, which is funny.
We might have lost him. He is having some work done on his phone. So while we wait for him to get back to us, what do you guys think so far?
Wow.
Main thing is, now do you know the difference between an inker and an artist?
Definitely.
Like the inker, pretty much, like I said, does make it come to life, but you really have to, like Angel.
Yeah.
For example, you're reading the comic book right there.
Yeah, I'm reading the Smurfs right now.
The person that drew those things, that's not the inker. The person that finishes the thing off, that's the inker. That's their job. So, Romo can't draw. I could probably
ink. So
weren't you working on that 8x10 for your mom?
What 8x10?
For your drawing.
Why are you talking about my mom, huh?
She's cool.
All right, there they go. Anyway, Al's back. Let them go.
No mother joke. Come on, you guys.
So you got Al Gordon back on the phone.
How you guys doing?
Guys.
I missed it. Was there mother jokes that I missed here?
No, I didn't let him get to that.
Ah, damn.
Told you they were just kids.
So where was I? Where did we click off? It's always funny to be talking to yourself and then ask a question and nothing.
Nobody answers. Of course, when you do answer, and that's when you sort of got a problem.
Yeah, well, that's when you start talking to yourself, and that's when you become a writer.
Yeah. So you were talking about, what were we talking about?
Oh, Dennis the Menace. I don't remember where I cut off. But it was really funny. You guys know Love and Rockets, one of the best ground-level underground comics ever done. Mm-hmm. It was done by three brothers, literally three brothers. And I remember I met those guys at a convention a long time ago. And we were all chatting about the really cool stuff that we liked as kids, because Mario, who has kind of stopped working, well, he still does on occasion, but he kind of decided he couldn't raise his family on the money they were making off of Love and Rockets, so he decided to be a contractor instead. He's still a really talented guy, but I remember Mario and I are the same age, and we were talking about these old books that we really dug as kids, and I said, yeah, Dennis the Menace, I don't know who that guy, you know, was that did those annuals, and all three of the brothers, like, in unison went, Al Weissman, and I was like, wow, you guys know who he is? And they're going, are you kidding? It's Al Weissman. And so at least I had good taste as a kid, you know. But I think the first stuff I started to buy in terms of, like, superheroes was probably Spider-Man, probably DC stuff. But I was there. I bought Spider-Man number 3 when I was, you know, too small to reach the top of the spinner rack, you know. Yeah. But I remember buying that and thinking that was the coolest comic I'd ever seen, and at that point I was a Marvel zombie for at least a few years.
Yeah, and the funny thing is now Marvel is doing a Marvel Zombies title, actually.
Well, you know, the funny thing with Marvel comics, I mean, I was a huge fan of that early stuff. I really dug Don Heck when he penciled and inked his own stuff on Iron Man, and I guess he did Giant Man and Ant-Man. He did one issue of Giant Man that I think he penciled and inked. No, actually, I take that back. I think there was a couple. And then he inked one issue over Jack Kirby. And I could always tell the difference between the pencilers, you know, which inkers were on the book. And I had favorites. I grew up with a buddy of mine who lived two houses or three houses away. I don't know if you guys know a guy named Steve Lealoha, who's also an inker and a pretty fantastic illustrator in his own right. He was working on Fables, I guess, for the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know that book?
No, I don't actually.
Steve's last name is Lealoha, which is Hawaiian for, like, baseball hat. How you doing? you know, like, anyway. So Steve and I grew up. Steve was a couple years older than I was. And we were both collecting when we were pretty young. I was 8. Steve was 10. And I, you know, we were both like trying to find all the, you know, the cool, hard to find comics. Like, well, there was no places that sold back issues back then, except for the occasional bookstores. And there was a couple guys you could buy stuff online from, a guy named Howard Rogowski. I remember that because I remember I couldn't afford Amazing Fantasy 15 because it was $15, and that was just, you know, too much money when you're 10 years old, you know.
Yeah. So we're talking to Al Gordon. He is inker, artist, everything. Yeah. So we're going to continue the conversation in just a few minutes. We'll get more into Al's career and also into how you can get into the comic book business yourself. We'll do that in just a few minutes. Before we do that, another Buzz Report, then we'll continue the conversation with Al Gordon.
This is the Geek Speak Radio Show Buzz Report for Thursday, September 16th. Here's what's buzzing right now. Screenwriter Carl Ellsworth has signed a deal with Columbia to write a live-action adaptation of R.L. Stine's Goosebumps book series. Neil Mortz will produce and hopes to create a potential family-driven franchise of films based on the materials. The Goosebumps books sold over 300 million copies worldwide, which makes it second only to another book series about a boy wizard.
Paramount Pictures has announced their intent to develop Spike TV's Deadliest Warrior show into a feature film. Deadliest Warrior puts historical warriors from different time periods against each other and analyzes data to see who would win. Think the CG boxing match in Rocky Balboa. Deadliest Warrior just wrapped its second season, and Paramount is keeping any plot details under wraps. Kevin James is set to star in an untitled comedy for Sony Pictures. He'll play a physics teacher who moonlights as a martial arts fighter to save the school's music program. The film is untitled as of now and is being written by Alan Loeb. Next week's Fringe Season 3 premiere will focus on people from the other side trying to convince our Olivia that she's really the other Olivia. And we learn a pretty basic difference between the two. Their marksmanship abilities are wildly different. Well, that's what's buzzing right now, and that's the Geek Speak Radio Show Buzz Report. Geek Speak Radio Show will be right back.
Prepare to broadcast worldwide.
You've discovered TalkZone.com.
TalkZone.com.
Let's get back to the Geek Speak Radio Show on TalkZone.com.
Let's do that. We're back on the Geek Speak Radio Show. We're talking to Al Gordon. Al, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, let's continue the conversation. So you told us what comics you were getting into. There is something that you are really known for, and that is Wildstar. Tell me about Wildstar.
I'm known for that? Huh. Yeah, there's a wiki page, which kind of surprised me. It's weird to run into information about yourself on the internet in such a professional manner. Wiki is such a bizarre thing. You can write, you can lie, you can do anything you want in there. And I assumed a lot of the information was just a bunch of BS in there. And I found my own page in there a few years back, and I was reading through it, and I was like, wow, no, this can't be right. This is wrong. And I went home and I was checking through the old books that I'd done when I first started, and whoever wrote the wiki page had it right. I think he had one mistake. I was wrong. I was like, that's right. I did that first. It's very bizarre. And then I found the Wildstar page, which was even way cooler. Wildstar was actually, that was the beginning of the whole image, revolution. I don't know what you want to call that, the whole image something. Eric Larson is a real good friend of mine. And Eric was part of, I think what they were calling the Marvel-less seven. All these guys that had left Marvel and had started working, you know, for themselves, and they invented the umbrella title of Image. And I was going through some personal stuff. My dad was real sick at the time, and he eventually passed away. So I couldn't be involved right away. But after my dad died, Eric kind of said, all right, you got to come on board now. You got to do something cool. And so I've got so many files of so many different character ideas and so many story ideas and ideas for screenplays and regular plays and all sorts of stuff. And I pulled one out and asked Jerry Ordway if he wanted to do it with me. And he said, yeah. And so we did four issues, which eventually came out as a trade paperback, which was cool. It was kind of interesting to be completely in control. It was good and bad. John Workman was lettering the book for me, and John's a really good editor. So if I messed up something, John was the first guy on it and was real helpful in putting that together. But it was very weird producing a comic book from, you know, from scratch, you know, from zero, from nada, and you know, writing the solicitations, writing a full script, inking it, doing all the, you know, being in charge of the lettering and the coloring and checking the blue lines that were coming back from the printer and just making all those decisions. I mean, you know, I literally had to make all the decisions, which was really a learning experience. It made me appreciate what a good editor, as opposed to a bad editor, does and how hard it is.
Right, and so obviously you have a lot of experience with that, and so because of that, you actually have now your comic book workshop that's ongoing, right? Tell everybody about that.
Yeah, it's just a workshop in San Francisco. It's been going on for, I guess, about 6 years, 7 years, I think. Actually, I don't know. And it's just, it was, it started with a syllabus that I'd written for a local private college. And I decided when that didn't work out the way I wanted it to, I decided to teach it on my own. So I've been teaching it privately for, I guess, about 7 years, something like that.
No, that's for everyone, right? You don't have to be, you know, a semi-professional artist. It can be anyone.
Yeah, anybody at all. It's a blast. I have this small cadre of guys that come to almost all of the classes who are like you guys, man. They're comic book geeks. And actually, they're all really pretty talented. And then there's usually kind of another group of people that come whenever they can afford it. You know, the economy is not too good, so it's not like people can afford to come all the time. And it's adult education, as my girlfriend says. You know, so it's people have actual lives and have to orient the workshop around their real lives, their kids, their wives, their jobs, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's
How do they enroll if somebody's listening and say, oh, yeah, I want to learn from Al Gordon? How do they enroll?
They just call me up, and I'm doing it on Thursday nights. And, yeah, we just work it out. It's kind of fun. I've had so many different kinds of creative people. I had a gal in the class who had a kind of a scary life-threatening thing happen to her. She had a clot in her leg, and she had to undergo emergency surgery, and it was pretty touch and go, and she survived it. She decided that, you know, when people have a life-affirming experience like that, they decide, you know, I'm going to do what I've always wanted to do, and she always wanted to write the great gothic comic book graphic novel. And so she was actually, she had a degree in art. And so she came into the class with that as her impetus. I got a couple of guys who are big comic book fans. They're both pretty talented. Both have wives and children and things like that. And, they're kind of the guys that because they, when I first started in comics, I got paid, to learn. When I first started as an inker, I think I was pretty bad. And I'm really surprised that I got enough work to teach me how to do, you know, what I was doing. These are the guys that didn't really get to do that. So they've kind of learned on their own, and they're pretty talented. They just never get a chance to, like, you know, have an editor say, I need this by Friday, and you better learn how to do this. So they're kind of the guys that were left out of that circle. You know, I've had guys that were more writers. I've had people that were, you know, more storytellers, guys that wanted to learn just how to ink, guys that wanted to learn how to, you know, lay out a page. So it's a pretty big umbrella for just learning about comics. When I first started it, I was doing like a whole historical background on comics for everybody that came in the class. But now it really is a workshop. It's not so much based on the syllabus anymore as it's people come in with what they want to work on, and then we all kind of critique it and deal with it in the class, in the workshop.
Okay. Hey, Al, this is Damien.
Hey, Damien. What's up?
Hey. Not much. How you doing?
I'm groovy.
All right. I wanted to ask you a question. So I wanted to know, what are your thoughts on comic books going digital, and is that something that you discuss within your class, your workshop?
I don't know much about it. You know, I know what it is, but I don't know of anybody that's really making any like money off of it. I mean, I don't think it's something you can do and expect to make a living off right now, but I could be wrong. I mean, I see stuff up that's just really pretty fantastic stuff. But you know, you can't really sell it if it's available for free, obviously. So you've got to get somebody to either sponsor the site, or you've got to get ads, or like you guys. I mean, you guys are like really heavy, man. I love the guy that introduces your show. It's like the reborn Don Pardo from Saturday Night Live or something.
That's Damien, actually.
That's Damien? That's you?
No.
No, that's not me.
No, it's not Damien. He can try, but no, it doesn't. He can't sound like that. Actually, that brings up another thing. Is Al, you've also done work outside of comics, right? Including some commercial voice work, and I hear you played in the rock band also.
Oh yeah, actually, I've been playing in band since I was about 12. I was in a bunch of Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area bands, play guitar, keyboards, and sing. So I did that for a long time. And actually, I made a living at that while I was trying to get into comic books and not getting a lot of work in the beginning. And I was, you know, I played in a lot of local bands that played your Tuesday through Saturday, 9 o'clock till 2 o'clock in the morning gig. Man, I'm pretty, I've got a lot of that under my belt. I've done voiceover work, but, you know, I've never had a demo tape. I really dig doing it. I mean, I've done voices since I was a little kid. It's totally a blast, but I was in with a couple of producers who would, the auditions were, they'd email you or fax you a script and you'd read it on somebody's answering machine. That was, and these are very pro gigs too, but talk about odd technology. But I've never had a demo tape. I'm actually trying to get one together now so I can get some other work. But I was doing a lot of commercial stuff, a lot of stuff for industrial. I've done stuff where you had to talk, where they hired an actor to do this gig, and he's explaining something. You know, it's an in-house industrial, and they didn't like his voice, so I had to loop his voice. So I had to be his voice. So you see his face talking, but you hear my voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, just weird industrial stuff like that. It's a blast. But I would, oh man, I would love to do cartoon voices or stuff like that. I did radio too for a long time in college.
I've actually done a lot of voice work myself because I've been in radio since before my voice changed, actually, since I was 11 years old.
Really?
And I've done some voice work. I've done some movie trailer work. So we'll keep in touch. If you want help with that demo, I can probably give you a hand with that.
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, we've got I landed, I don't know if I should tell you guys this, I landed a gig, there's a lot of podcast stuff, you know, and my girlfriend does it because she digs it. She's an actor, she's an AFTRA, and, but to keep her chops up, she does, work, does a lot of podcasting stuff. She's learned how to edit, you know, which is kind of amazing, because she was just not into that kind of stuff at all, and so she's learned how to use GarageBand on our Mac at home, and she's done all that kind of cool stuff. But she got a gig through, and I feel like an idiot here. I forgot what the name of the little company is. I think it's Thought Bubble Productions, and they do stuff for, they do Buffy, podcasts, where they have a bunch of actors that sort of do, I think it's called Buffy Between the Lines. Although I could be wrong. And they decided they wanted to do some comic book oriented stuff. And so they put out a casting call to people who wanted to work on it. And I nailed the Batman job. So I'm actually Batman on a podcast. So I have to be real, pissed off and annoyed and talk like that all the time. And,
you got to do the Christian Bale voice.
Well, you know, I asked him that. I said, you really don't want me to sound like I'm constipated, do you? And they said, no, just do Batman and don't sound like somebody beat the crap out of you. I'm not a real big fan of that weird voice. It just seems so bizarre to me. But I do kind of my Batman's kind of a weird cross between Clint Eastwood and, I don't know, Alan Alda or something. But it's a blast, though. It's really fun. I don't get a chance to act too much. Like I say, most of the voiceover stuff I did was industrial stuff. So you're just really sort of explaining to people how to do things and trying to be lively and talk, be uplifting and sell a product. It's pretty similar to doing.
And voice acting is real acting because you're basically you're by yourself in a closet pretty much. And
you're
supposed to pretend, you know, something's in front of you or someone's in front of you.
Yeah, no, it's a blast. I dig it. It's, you got to close your eyes. It's really funny. My girlfriend used to teach method acting, and I've always had a real problem with method acting because it seems like a bunch of guys who never learned to play as a child. You know, it's like you guys never played as a child. What did you do? I mean, we're, speaking of being in a closet. But, growing up, I mean, we used to always, even before comics, you'd go and I live pretty close to the ocean, in a funky little, I don't live there anymore, but I grew up in a little tiny funky bedroom community south of San Francisco called Pacifica. And,
I used to live there myself, actually.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Whereabouts in Pacifica?
In Pacifica, I was, what is that place called? Over by where now there's a 7-Eleven, I think is by there. I forget what that area is called. Right off the freeway.
Right. Well, it's a big long strip, and there's a north end and a south end. And I lived on the north end. It was the little community was called Pacific Manor. We used to affectionately call it. You live there?
That's Yeah.
Okay, well, then you'll appreciate it. We used to affectionately call it Pacific Manure. but, yeah, and,
so
you know.
Did I, actually.
Yeah, exactly. But we were, you know, I grew up about 8 blocks from the ocean. And, you know, as a kid, you go down to the beach and play, you know, and I remember there was a movie that came out when I was a little kid called Robinson Crusoe on Mars. And, you know, me and my buddies would go down there and pretend we were, you know, on some weird planet without human life. Yeah. Wishful thinking. yeah, you know, so my girlfriend was teaching a method acting class, and it was really, really odd. On occasion, I would sit in and watch these people, and they'd be trying to get to the root of this character and stuff. It's like, what, did you guys never play? What did you, I mean, can't you just be Spider-Man? I mean, I had friends who probably developed multiple personality disorder because they would be, you know, J. Jonah Jameson and, you know, Robbie Robertson and Doc Octopus, and I'd be like Spider-Man. But these guys played everybody else, you know, when you're like 9. So probably a bad thing. But, yeah, it's a blast. You know, you're acting whether you're in front of a camera or whether you're completely in your head. It's just, it's playing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cool.
Like, we're talking to Al Gordon. He's a writer, inker.
Upstart.
Rock star.
Rockstar in that too, yeah.
Yeah, Batman. He's also Batman now.
I know. Is that cool?
Yeah.
It was so funny when I got that gig. It was just so funny when I got that gig because I was just, I just did it for fun. And so my girlfriend's checking her Twitter this morning and she goes, you got Batman. I'm like, you're kidding me. They hired me as Batman? I'm not Batman. I wanted to be Superman. I wanted to be the big Boy Scout, you know, and they hired me to be Batman. What do they know?
Well, let me ask you this Batman question. for Batman 3, who do you want to be the villain, or should the Joker be replaced, or Heath Ledger, I should say?
I like those movies. I got kind of bored with the last one. I kept predicting what was going to happen. I got tired of the evil, you know. I thought what's-his-name was really good as the Joker. I thought he was pretty friggin' amazing as the character. Yeah. But I'm not a big fan of Bale as Batman. I just think he overdoes it too much. You know, I wasn't a big fan of the first two Timothy Burton movies. I mean, I enjoyed them, but I thought they were really strangely cast, except for Danny DeVito as the Penguin. That was really bizarre. Yeah, it was bizarre. I'm not sure if I liked it or not, but it was certainly. And Catwoman was amazing. Actually, I take back everything I just said, because Catwoman was worth watching that second movie just for her. I mean, besides being, you know, a major babe, she can really act, and she totally pulled it off. It's real difficult to me. I have a real hard time watching guys who are really over the top as a character. The guy that played the Joker, what's his name again? In the latest movie,
Jack Nicholson.
No, in the latest movie, the guy that
Heath Ledger.
Away. Yeah, he played it. I mean, he was crazy. You know, that sounds like one of the most fun acting gigs around, is being a crazy guy. I just watched 12 Monkeys. And wants, you know, what's his name, who played the crazy guy in that? I mean, what a great part. So it's a little easier to be crazy as an evil guy or as a good guy, you know. I personally think Batman's a little crazy. I think he should be played a little crazy as opposed to, you know, just really straight. I mean, he's a guy that wears leather and heels, and I see a lot of that around San Francisco. But you know, I prefer to think of Batman as being just a little off. You know, he's just a little nuts. You know, whereas Superman is like the super Boy Scout, and he's like so completely normal that it's he's probably pretty boring on a date, you know. but yeah, I don't know. I thought Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman was really amazing. There's only a couple of those guys that pulled it off besides the latest. You know, Joker, I thought, what's his name in the second Superman movie? I forget his name. He's in a really great movie called The Limey. Really good actor.
Yeah, General Zod, you mean?
Yeah, Zod. I thought he was really great. I mean, you know, Superman was really good, too. I think he did a real nice job as, like, the Boy Scout. But General Zod, man, he
Terrence
was,
Stamp is the actor's name.
Terrence Stamp, right. He was fantastic. I mean, you know, I was pretty young when that came out, but I'll never forget the old where the guy says, oh, God, and he says, no, Zod. I mean, that's awesome. It's really hard to play something that, you know, guys, you know, you're playing a guy that's running around with his underwear on the outside of his clothes. It's like, you know, how do you take that seriously, right?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's difficult. So, I mean, I really like the first two X-Men movies because they were more action-adventure than superhero. I mean, they're a bunch of guys in leather again. But, you know, it was – those were really good movies, I thought. I thought they treated it really honestly, and there was a real good sense of – a real strong sense of peril with the characters. And, you know, some of the best one-liners around. How do we know you're Wolverine? You're an asshole? Oh, yeah, you're him. Yeah. Oh, because you're a dick, I think. Can I say that on a podcast?
Yeah. Well, even if you can, you just did, so it's out there.
Damn. Oh, now I'm busted.
No, that's all right. Yeah, but that is one of my favorite lines there, because that was just perfect Wolverine.
I heard that it was a Joss Whedon line. I heard that he got paid to script doctor that, and that was one of his lines, which would make sense.
Was it?
He's a pretty clever guy. Yeah. So, what else with you guys, man? This is a pretty cool show.
Yeah, it is. We like it here. We talk a lot about comics, about movies, about anything that we're geeking out about. We talk about it here.
If you guys want to interview somebody who is just an amazing, I mean, he's got so much knowledge of the comic book industry. He's one of my favorite letterers. He's a really cool, just all around nice guy named John Workman, who I think is one of the top 10 best comic book letterers who ever lived. I mean, people think of comic book letterers as the guys now they're just the guy that types in the stuff and they, you know, use a program that imitates hand lettering. But yeah. John hand letters, and he also does the coolest sound effects and the coolest logos. And if you're a fan of Thor by Walt Simonson, or the FF by Walt Simonson, John is real instrumental because Walt loves to work with John in doing sound effects, so they become a real integral part of the artwork. And John is the man. He's also he knows more about the history of comics than anybody. If you guys ever want to do a, in fact, have us both on and we'll argue, and that would be even more fun.
Absolutely, we'll definitely have you on again. And Al Gordon, thanks again for coming on the Geek Speak Radio Show.
Yeah,
before I let you go, though, do you have any website or anything for the workshop that you want to promote?
Yeah, you can check Craigslist in San Francisco. You can also if you just search me, if you wiki me, I think at the in fact I should just look at it here and see if it's there. If you search me, you'll get I've got what they're calling a table at the comiccon.com. site, which is comiccon. There's just one C in the middle there and one C at the beginning.
Yeah, I think I have that actually linked up on geekspeakradioshow.com, so that's probably the page you're talking about.
Yeah, and there's stuff in there about the workshop, and if you wiki me, you'll see a really cool picture of me with Tarzan, man, with Denny Miller, and me looking really goofy. one of those convention pictures where somebody said, hey, take a picture, and I went, huh? And some crazy guy just made a list of virtually everything I've ever worked on. Is that amazing? I mean, I don't know, but it's still amazing to me that somebody has like gone through your career and documented it. That just blows my mind. I'm just a funky little fanboy geek from Pacifica.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's this huge page of just, I mean, holy crap, just everything I've worked on. Or certainly close to everything I've worked on. It's amazing. Wikipedia is really cool. It's just like, you know, it's just an amazing encyclopedia.
Yeah, again. So we'll definitely have you on again, Al. Maybe we'll have that little argument with John Workman if come on.
John's a really cool guy. He's like one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And if you want to talk, I mean, he's got an amazing memory for numbers. He could probably tell you, you know, close to what Superman was selling in 1948. And he can tell you what was going on in the politics of what was happening. He was also an editor, I think, at National Lampoon and Heavy Metal. So he's been in the business for a long, long time, besides just being a real creative letterer. He's a really cool guy.
Okay. So we'll probably make that happen. So again, Al Gordon, thanks a lot for coming on the show. You're welcome back anytime.
My pleasure. How about Wednesday?
Sure. We'll do okay. lunch.
See you guys then.
My people will call your people. All right.
My
thanks
pleasure.
A lot. We'll
great.
Talk to you later.
Good luck with your show, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right.
Okay. So there you go. Al Gordon here in San Francisco.
That really made my day to hear Batman.
You hear Batman?
Yeah,
good.
That made my day.
Good, you could take cover. You could take the lunch bill. You could pay for it.
I will. If you could do like a voicemail ringtone or something. That's amazing.
Lunch is on you, Angel.
Anytime, Batman.
Okay, so let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk amongst ourselves. There's some stories that I want. Actually, there is one thing that I do want to talk to you guys about. We'll find out what that is in just a few minutes. Before we do that, you know what we got to do.
Buzz report.
This is the Geek Speak Radio Show Tech Report for Thursday, September 16th. Last night at the Tokyo Game Show, Capcom announced that a new Devil May Cry game is in development. The game is a reboot of the franchise and is being developed by Capcom USA along with Ninja Theory, creators of Heavenly Sword. Alex Jones is the producer for the project based out of Capcom's San Mateo branch called CEI. Capcom Japan is overseeing the project. Also from the Tokyo Game Show came news from Sony that 3D Blu-ray playback compatibility is coming to the PS3 sooner than expected. Next week. An announcement had been made a few weeks ago about Sony running into glitches in the software that would allow PS3s to play back 3D Blu-rays, but looks like that's fixed. Now we just need some 3D games. A study conducted at the University of Rochester has found that video games make players more sensitive to their surroundings and aids a person's ability to make quick, correct decisions. Two group of gamers were given Call of Duty 2, and the other group played The Sims. The results show that the group that played Call of Duty 2 had quicker reaction times when given real-world audio and visual tests, while The Sims group was only slightly slower in response time. New Yorkers can expect to get free Wi-Fi in Central Park courtesy of Time Warner and Cablevision, but only for 30 minutes. After that, you can still use the access point at 99 cents a day. Start spreading the news. That's the Geek Speak Radio Show Tech Report.
Geek Speak Radio Show will be right back. Transmit. And now, back to the Geek Speak Radio Show on TalkZone.com. Here's Henry and Romo.
Hola. We're back.
Going on.
Multilingual here. Welcome back to the Geek Speak Radio Show. We are having a very fun time. Thanks to Al Gordon. He really got everybody's energy up here.
Yeah, he did.
And also thanks to Jeff Loeb in the first hour and Brent Anderson for coming on. Just looking at something before we start talking about some other things. Marvel editor-in-chief, Joe Quesada. Jeff, I think, mentioned him and knows him very well. He was talking to MTV yesterday, and he said that he pretty much is confirming that yes, what Jeff said, that yes, we are doing live action. And, well, let me quote him, Joe Quesada. Let me quote him. He says, we're talking to some people, we have some great ideas, and we want to make sure that whatever we come up with first is explosive and just has everyone smiling from ear to ear. He explains that Marvel's recent acquisition by Disney, which Jeff mentioned also, had helped to facilitate the move into television. Says we didn't have a television network before, and now we do. We're part of ABC Studios. This opens us up to many incredible ideas and creators that want to work with us, not just in comics or animation or film, but now also in television. Now, like I told Jeff, Damon Lindelof and Marvel and live TV, we're there.
Yep, that's true.
Besides ABC Studios, they'll probably go for it because Damon did kind of do a show that was a little big for them.
Yeah.
Something about an island, I think.
Yeah.
So anyways, it's just us till the end of the show. So first of all, let me ask you guys, who was your favorite? Because you guys were like literally geeking out over
all of them. To be honest, all of them, but Batman really,
let's make a change.
Batman really, Mr. Al Gordon really made my day.
Mr. Al Gordon made your day?
Yeah.
Because he's Batman?
Yeah, because he's Batman.
What's your favorite show again? TV show.
TV show. That's hard. It's The Simpsons, I would say.
Not Mad Men?
Mad Men, but I thought you were talking about cartoons. I'm still stuck on cartoons.
So,
the
like
real
Batman.
Person show would be Mad Men.
His counterpart at DC, Superman.
Mm-hmm. Superman.
We talked about this a couple of days ago. Would you like to see him as Clark Kent / Superman?
Yes.
You would?
Yes.
Well, John Hamm, he was on one of the shows, one of the morning shows this morning on Regis, to be exactly. And he was asked about the Superman role. As a matter of fact, our producer, Dave, he has some of the audio of what he had to say about that. So, Dave, whenever you're ready, go ahead and hit it.
So now there's a big rumor that I think is a genius. I kind of love this rumor that you're going to play Superman. Is
perfect.
That true?
That's perfect.
You're, I mean, you are Superman.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. No, those are sort of the internet things that one person says and then 15 more people Twitter it and then it becomes this sort of phenomenon. Yeah. It's sort of news to me. So if the powers that be are thinking that, I'd like them to get in touch with me. We can maybe discuss it.
Call as soon as possible.
Great idea. I mean, it's a really great idea.
Yeah, sure, you look perfect.
So he's saying that he's very interested.
Well, I hope so.
It's so easy for him to play
him,
it, though, because what's Mad Men, the setting?
The 50s and 60s,
and when did Superman come out? 50s and 60s. I mean, it just fits the timeline. And of course, he'd be perfect to play it. There's no doubt about it.
And again, this is, I mentioned a couple of days ago when we talked about this, it is just a rumor right now. It's not confirmed. Mm-hmm. Don't think we have a breaking story here or anything.
Yeah.
It's just a rumor. They said it themselves also. But the question I had back then, and I'll ask it again today, is I thought this reboot was supposed to go younger.
Yeah.
And I mean, and John Hamm, he has the Clark Kent look. He has a Superman chiseled face look.
Yes, he does.
There's a couple of pictures that I saw on some of the stories. Cause it's all, like he said, it's all over the internet now. There are some pictures that are accompanying those stories. And some of those pictures, he does have kind of a Christopher Reeve kind of look.
He does.
But this is it. If the fans want it, and people are talking about it, of course studios are going to be convinced to be like, you know what? People are onto something here, and we are going to turn this
I really believe in John Hamm, and he can do this.
Yeah.
He can do this. I'm pulling for John Hamm.
Well, somebody that Damien wants on this show.
Is John Hamm?
Christopher Nolan.
Oh.
Oh, Mr. Nolan.
He's the godfather for this reboot. He's executive producing this. His brother is, brothers. One of them is writing it. The other one is maybe directing. Again, also rumor. He may make his directorial debut on whatever they end up calling it, not Superman Reborn, whatever they end up calling this thing. So there you go. John Hamm, he's definitely interested. Like you said, the powers that be, meaning Christopher Nolan, give him a call. Get
Please,
on the phone.
Mr. Nolan,
tweet him, whatever you have to do.
That's true.
That would be a dream come true.
For you.
Me. Yeah.
So what I wanted to talk about, actually, is it involves all of you, not these guys here. It involves them, too, but mainly you guys, the listeners. And that is about a month ago, we went to a comic book store here in San Francisco. We remember because you did most of the talking.
Yeah.
And we got to meet a lot of the local comic book artists.
Yeah.
And they're not working for Marvel or DC. They're not part of the big boys, as they call them.
No, they're just inspired.
Yeah, they're trying to break in. And it was fun meeting them. I could hear the passion in their voice. I could hear the creativity. They showed us some of their work. There was one thing that was missing.
And what was that?
A voice. I don't mean literally. I mean, they don't have a platform. I mean, yeah, it was cool us talking to each other, getting to know each other, but I was thinking, how about we do it here in the studio?
Get
to meet them. You know, we'll provide the food, of course.
Always.
the drinks, well, you guys have to do that yourselves. Mm. But come here, we'll talk about it, but give us your ideas, talk about it, and you never know that we may hear, it may hit the right ears.
Yeah,
You may get that call that makes you the next, hopefully, Stan Lee, the next Joe Quesada before we became Ed, the next Jeff Lowe, the next Brent Anderson, the next Al Gordon, whatever it be, it may hit the right ears, and it could all be because of us.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
A nice round table.
I don't expect anything but a thank you and keep being our friends when you become then. Don't say, oh, Geek Speak Show, I never heard of them. Who are they? No, just be our friend. That's all we ask for.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, that's one thing that I really want to do.
That's a great idea.
And we had Damien, producer Damien, he brought on a couple of his friends not too long ago who are in that boat. They're trying, they have a script, they have some outlines, and they're trying to sell it.
What was
behind that light bulb turning on in your head to say, like, hey,
a switch.
They need a voice? Or
that's usually what turns light bulbs on.
Oh, a switch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Electricity also?
I thought you had to screw it in and then voila.
Ben Franklin?
Of course, I know.
You have to turn it off first, otherwise you get electrocuted.
But that's besides the point, right? How did you come up with this idea? I mean, there has to be a plan to your works.
That. But like I said, when I was there, actually I passed by the, cause yesterday was New Comic Book Day, so I went to buy my comic books, And I went to that store again.
Yeah.
And when I was when we left, I was thinking, hey, it was really fun meeting everybody here. And then, boom, the light bulb came on. And I said, why don't we do that on the air?
That's smart, yeah.
Because, like I said, I mean, you that night you did most of the talking. You know exactly what and who I'm talking about. You met them all.
Yeah.
You exchanged business cards and everything.
They have a lot of stuff to say. And they are, you know, interested in as well. They are the next future of what comic books could be, or writers, or
should be if they can bring the real
content.
I mean,
they're the next generation.
You know, the next generation. And they are as passionate as anyone out there.
Because a lot of them are your age. They're young. They have really bright ideas. Not going to call them exactly original, because like we found out not too long ago, there really isn't that much original stuff out there. But that's fine. As long as it's not original. Jeff Lowe mentioned it earlier, and that's the I actually learned it from a very, very big, actually huge radio personality. He calls himself the King of All Media. I got to meet him a couple of times. He actually told me the secret to his success and to anything really is what Jeff Loeb said. If people care about it, they'll be there. If they don't, they won't be there.
Yeah.
So that's all that really matters. The two, Damon's two friends that were here, they kind of localize it here. And obviously people here in San Francisco, they'll recognize the locations and everything. And I got some emails after that show saying that, well, if I don't live in San Francisco, I don't know if I'm going to understand it. Well, my answer to that was, I did email them back. My answer to that was, I didn't live in New York.
But you understood Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Yeah.
But I connected with Peter Parker.
Yeah.
It's the characters. It goes back to what Jeff Loeb was saying.
Exactly.
Well, it goes back to what we were saying in the beginning of the show about stories and movies and TV shows. We all care about is the story and characters.
Yeah. So that's where that idea came from. And, you know, we have a space over there that's just sitting there wide open. And I figured put it to use.
Yeah.
And we can put tables in there, microphones, everything. We'll make a night out of it.
Yeah.
And I was thinking maybe we can invite Al Gordon.
That'd be cool.
With Al Gordon.
That'd be nice.
You know, he can carry the conversation. And these guys, they would love to meet Al and somebody who's done it, who's been there.
Yeah.
So, and maybe we'll get some people to sign up for his workshop also. So kill five birds with one bazooka. So there you go. If you guys want to be a part of that, obviously you have to be here in San Francisco, or at least in the Bay Area. We're not going to pay for anybody's flights. If you want to fly here on your own, you're more than welcome to.
Yeah.
But send us an email at comments@geekspeakradioshow.com. comments@geekspeakradioshow.com. And let us know that you want to come, who you want to bring. Tell us who you are, what you are, what your idea is, and we'll see if we get enough people to do it, and we'll do it here, and you guys will hear it the next day on the air.
Cool.
So there you go. That's the show. Went by fast. Always goes fast when we have fun. Tomorrow, hey, it's Friday, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is Friday.
You know
so
what that means.
We do have, the
TGIF?
Last day of the week?
Yeah, and also go to the movies.
Yeah, we have one. Well, we talked about it yesterday. You guys want to go or no? Because it does have somebody's name attached to it.
Let's go. Why not? Let's just go. It's on Angel anyway.
Okay.
Are you Batman?
No.
Okay.
It's her treat.
You're painting.
Those cinnamon mint things are your treat.
Nice.
So there you go. We'll go see that tomorrow. Now, we may have a guest from Los Angeles, another one of the part of our field trip, virtual field trip that we had. Not a museum, but something comic book related. It's going to be pretty interesting, and we're trying to get a confirmation from that. Damon's working on it as we speak. So otherwise, it'll just be us, but we may have a little surprise for you. So till then, go read some comics. Go get ready for Jeff Loeb and Marvel's coming cartoons and shows, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.